Welcome to Salon number 7 on scores and constraints. During the past year, Simon has been organizing a series of salons on the question of how artists work today and how they speak about method. We're very much interested in informal kinds of speech and dialogue as a way to get a view upon the embodied knowledge and discourses that artists carry, rather than inviting, say, academics to speak from an outside perspective about their work. This one on scores and constraints is a part of a longer research trajectory of Selma on scores, which had recently in November a laboratory, Opera Spidey Pomena, on experimental writing and scores in relation to the book. In January, we will also launch a publication, What's the Score Now, by Mira van Imschoot, on a new web platform called Oral Sites, which will include scores by artists such as Jonathan Burrows, Antoine Herbert, Vincent Duvalier, William Forsythe, and several others, with annotations, interviews, etc. And we might go on in the coming 1.5 year with projects related to scores. So, why Selma's interest in this particularly? I think it allows one to shift focus from issues of thematic research, dramaturgy, and say a very strong interest nowadays in message-based art in terms of audio content, etc., to issues of form and methodology on the one hand. On the other hand, I think that we can also say that scores provide a different view upon production conditions and the issue of formatting nowadays. Everything has to fit in performance, but what does that mean? This kind of implicit regime of formats, and how can you make that explicit by working on scores and constraints for instance, as a different way of relating to those production conditions on the one hand, and on the other hand, making that a tool for self-reflection and eventually for cultural critique. Now, for this afternoon, the question is not so much what scores and constraints are, so I think that definition I will put on hold for now, and that will become, it will gain weight and texture through everyone speaking this afternoon, and at the end of the day, we'll have an implicit idea of what these scores and constraints are. I'm rather interested in what they can do, how they function in people's work, and then eventually what the wider significance might be. So I invited total 9 people who will speak this afternoon in rather short statements of 10 minutes about how they work with scores and constraints and how they function in their practice. In order to manage all these statements, I've made an order of a few thematic answers that are loose groupings. Where always someone coming from outside of the field. Dance and choreography, so we have several people from dance and choreography, but also people coming from other fields like contemporary music, graphic design, etc. So it's always an outsider, between quotation marks, that starts a dialogue series, maybe a statement, a counter statement, a dialogue between two people, and so on. I would first like to give the word to Stefan Prinz, composer and improviser. I thought of Stefan starting the series because the emotion score comes, as we know, from music, so I thought that's maybe a good place to start.
Okay, thanks. Yes, so I'm both a performer and a composer, and actually there is already some kind of tension there when it comes to score. What I'm going to do, the way I thought about the score, or what a score does, is really from this framework of composing and performing. Thinking of this, it was an interesting exercise. It was kind of frustrating as well, because there are so many types of scores, especially in music, in contemporary music, there are, you can really You have a very broad range from scores as we know it with notes, going all the way to graphic scores. You also have instruction scores like Fluxus scores, where there is just one word or an instruction for a performer to do. So having all these different kinds of scores, trying to generalize what a score does, was a very interesting exercise. And for me, perhaps thinking, or the most interesting approach would be to see a score as a mediator, actually. So what does a score do? It mediates. Of course, it's not the only approach, but I think it's an approach I felt comfortable with. The interesting thing about this approach, so a score mediates, is that it implies some kind of dynamic character. It's not something static. It's something which can have a lot of relationships with a lot of different levels. I'll go into that shortly. And you almost automatically get this kind of, you can see the score as a web of mediations. It mediates between, of course, again, I'm thinking of my my world, which is the world of music and sound. So it can mediate between composer, first of all, when you are working on a piece. It mediates between your own thoughts about the piece. So you have the concept, which you try to translate into a score, or something which communicates with the musician. So it's a mediation, first of all, between the composer, his thoughts, and then the realization of these thoughts being the score. Then the second level, it mediates between the composition and the musician, which has to perform this score, or wants to perform the score. Then, of course, if the composition involves several musicians, you have a mediation between the performers on stage through the score. And then there's another important way of mediation, which is some kind of sedimentated mediation, which is the score or the performance mediating with society, with the historical or societal context this score is in. And of course, there are a lot of cross-references or mediations between every level there. Just for the sake of clarity, I will explain a little bit what I mean with these mediations on these four different levels, which are interconnected, of course. So, first of all, being a composer, you think about something you want to do with performers, or so you have a concept, you have an idea, you try to organize this, and there is a constant interaction between your ideas and the score. At least that's the way I experience it. So you're trying to, I'm trying to crystallize my thoughts on paper or some kind of score. It doesn't necessarily have to be paper. And while doing that, there is a constant feedback with the paper. It talks back, it says how your thoughts, what's possible, what's not possible, what they imply, what can change. Perhaps an interesting metaphor would be to think of quantum physics in this sense. When you look at an atom, already the fact of looking at the atom changes the state of the atom. In a way, that's how I experience the score as well at that point. You're trying to look at your ideas, your concepts, you work it out, but when you're doing that, you're already changing the way the ideas. Then there is a level of the mediation between composer and musician. Composition and musician. So you're a composer, you wrote some kind of score, something which communicates with the musician, and the musician is then confronted with this. The typical classical situation, which we know from the long play records and CDs we have at home, is that there is this composer having some divine thoughts about sounds, and he writes a score, and this score then is almost, well, this score is like the utopian perfect state of these thoughts. It's like a crystallization. If it's being performed perfectly, you have a perfect image of the composition the composer had in mind. This is a very classical top-down approach. Composer, score, performer, and yeah. There are other ways of using a score. You can, since the score is all this mediation between a composition and a musician, the score can also be, or the subject of the mediation can also be the mediation itself. For example, there are these composers, contemporary composers, who in the classical, contemporary classical world are called the new complexity composers. There are composers who write scores which are extremely demanding for a performance, very, very virtuosic. It's a very common practice in these circles when you write for, let's say, violin. You have like 6 tapes of information for one violin. For example, one could be that every hand, every string has different states. You have a lot of information. And the score then communicates on a different level with the performer, and the performer, or a lot of times, the reason why composers write these kind of scores is to try to activate the performer on another level, because then the performer has to find his way through this abundance of information. So the performer becomes a kind of filter of the information given by the composer. And actually, at that point, the score becomes what's not in the score at a certain level. Because then you have so much information as a performer, you cannot cope with it, you can impossibly perform it. It's not anymore this classical approach where the score is the perfect utopian thing to perform, but it's more about finding a way as a performer into this labyrinth. And this action of this act of finding the way creates the tension and is the goal of the score. So in a way, the score explains more to performer what not to do than what they have to do. So in a way, the score becomes what's not in the score, which is an interesting thing. Another possibility, as opposed to the classical approach, would be a graphical score. I don't know how many of you have ever seen the incredible, beautiful score by Cornelius Cardew, Treatise. It's just one example. There are a lot of interesting graphical scores where, for example, in this example, Treatise, there is no legend. So you get an incredibly complicated system of signs, and there is no explanation about how to translate these signs. So as a performer, you have to, again, find your own way there. So the communication, the mediation is different again. There are other examples. Two attempts I made myself to go away from this classical approach. One would be, for example, to use a classical score in combination with some kind of verbal score, where you could, for example, superimpose classical performers playing together with improvising performers who have another way of interacting. There is another piece I've been working on, and which I'm actually translating, or there is a piece for 4 electric guitars that live generated scores on 4 computers in a network, which I have been working on, and there the concept of the score becomes something yet different. The score then is generated on computers which are connected to each other, which talk to each other, let's say, and the performers never know exactly on each point what they will get on the score. So actually the score then becomes, or the mediation goes through technology. So there is another way of interaction. A metaphor I thought of when writing that score or that piece was the score being a skeleton, and the performers have to put the flesh on the skeleton to make the creature live. So then again, there is another network of relationships between composer, performer, score, society. Actually, now I'm together with Sheila Naraki. We're working on a kind of translation in some way of this score, which was thought for musicians, to translate it also to a performer. Since, for example, this score is very abstract, the ways of interaction can be translated to actually almost every medium. So another level of mediation was the level between the mediation between the performers while making composition or shaping composition. So these traditional scores I talked about, that's one possibility. You also have so-called game pieces. I don't know if you know John Zorn's game pieces, like Gobra. There are several examples where actually there is not any more a kind of hierarchy, but there are constraints, rules, which are imposed on performers, and every performer has the same rights to apply these rules. And applying rule A has an implication on the next rules which can be applied. So that's yet another way of communicating or mediating. Yeah, and then the examples I already mentioned, like graphical scores, which could be more indeterminate, and which activate the performer on another level. Or for example, having this technological mediator in between the composer and the performer. And yeah, I don't know how many seconds I still have to talk. Just enough probably to explain. So this final level of mediations I talked about, as a composer, you wrote a piece or you made a piece together with performers in some way. The piece is there, the piece is being performed. The sedimentation of this piece, so the communication with that piece, with society, with the context the piece is being performed, is also a very interesting and important thing, I think. Something important that a score does. Of course, you can have different levels there. You can go, think about the performance itself. How does this communicate with society? What happens at that point? You can have installations where the spectator or somebody who walks by interacts with this score, which could be a computer program as well. You can also think of the score as the bearer of ideas, might be religious in some kind. So we can think of the Gregorian chant, the message of God being communicated, the message of Marx in music of Hans Eisler or Cornelius Cardew could be another example. In music theater, it's very, or it's much easier to communicate direct ideas as well. And then, of course, you have more indirect ideas, which are to be found in the score indirectly. They're communicated through the music, not with the music. And there are plenty of examples there of composers who have a certain vision on the world, and through that vision, they write music which metaphorically envisions this vision. Yeah, I think I passed my 10 minutes, right? Or...
Yes, I will have to pause you for now.
Okay, perfect.
So I will give, but we can come later back to it in dialogue. So I propose to give the word now to Kaiser Sandström, who will present tonight a performance together with Friedrich Altstadt here at the platform. It's called Listen With Your Skin, See With Your Ears.
So I've written this, I have it on paper, and if I go too fast, I'm not used to speaking, so then you can hold me for a while, or I mean, tell me to speak slower. I will also put. Some photos. Now it's not so easy if everyone sits in kind of it. Yeah. So I just let this run meanwhile I talk. And I've written this in relation to our work that we will present tonight and in relation to where we are and using this opportunity to think about score, to understand our own work and process better. So there are both definitions of what the score might be, or as well as what it does or might do. Okay. Scores of sound and constraints of vision. A score is a writing for space and action. A score is controlling performance, Alan Kaprow, 1959. A score enables freedom within. A score leaves out a significant amount to the interpretation of the dancer, Wikipedia. A score is a contract between the maker and the doer. A score asks for obedience, Andrea Lepecki. A score asks for your engagement to act fully within. A score asks you to ask, how is it that I relate to this, and what is happening when I undergo or act within this form? A score materializes experience. A score takes care that you will be able to return. I see myself at the side, for example, sitting down at one edge of the studio's dance floor with a white sheet of paper in front of me and a pen in my hand. The fuzziness of just gone through experiences are clustered together in a cloud of sensations and memories. Returning to the paper, some of them might stick together and form thoughts, definitions, discoveries, or concepts, becoming recognizable into language. Must a score be a written visual document? I will trace three different ways in which we have used what could be called or reproduced as scores in our current process with listen with your skin, see with your ears. Concept development, choreography, and composition, myself and Felix Astad, together with Ulrika Bad. One, a score is an organization within the continuous and constant chaos, which is the world. Don't remember who said this. First example, choose the end station of one metro line in your city. Decide a destination where to get off. Make the journey and find your way to a meeting place, for example, a cafe. Decide with someone to have a date there the following day. The following day, you go to your chosen departure station together with a witness and security person. Put on a blindfold. Enter the metro. Get off at your decided destination and find your way to the meeting place where you meet your appointed blind date. Talk with the person, still with the blindfold on, and with departure in this experience for about an hour. Optional, document your journey with a sound recording device and a photo camera. Alternatively, let your witness and security person take photos. So, we can talk about what this does later. Two. A score promises something will come out from it. A result that will be reflected in accordance with the constraints and defined by the score itself. Second example, five levels of listening. First level, listen to what you hear inside your body. For example, breath, cracking of bones. Also thoughts are part of what's heard inside your body. Second level, listen to the sounds close to yourself, for example, frictional clothes. Third level, listen to the sound you yourself produce with your body in other materials, for example, the floor and its resonance and timbres. Fourth level, listen to the other sound produced in the room, but which you are not directly causing yourself. Fifth level, listen to the sounds you cannot see, for example, a car or an ambulance outside the room. Move only when the impulse for movement is a response to what you hear, consciously or unconsciously. Follow the bodily impulses parallel to the conscious listening experience within the five levels of listening scheme. Three, a score creates a score for a new score. The third example is an idea about a musical score made from movement, from a movement composition. The method would be as follows. Movements made from an implicit musical experience, what we call inner musicality, is producing sound by amplification and diffusion in the space through microphones attached on the dancers' bodies, speakers, and the controller feedback. This choreography is being recorded, some of it in other environments. The recorded dance and milieu becomes, in turn, a score for a new dance composition. Seeing the heard. In all of these scores above, listening is at the center. In order to sharpen the hearing, sight has been constrained or removed. We have shifted the hierarchy of the senses in performance from the visible to the audible. Moving with intention on listening and sound was actually a liberating experience for me and Ulrika, and enabled us to dance unlocked from the troubles, cliches, codes, representations of the dance, how a dance might look or be read through the visual hegemony. We have hardly looked at each other during the practice, but well listened to each other and together. In case of the blind journey, it was surprisingly easy not to see, as long as we had a visual memory of the space from the day before. However, when we made a mistake in our memory, we were really totally lost and started to interpret and guide ourselves on very dubious findings and interpretations of where we were. Still without vision, we were holding on to vision via memory, together with tactile and audible information. Hearing the scene. However, is it possible to separate hearing from the other senses? Based on the philosopher Alban Noy's book Action in Perception, perception is not something we undergo as passive receivers, something that merely happens to us. In order to be able to perceive impressions, one sense must relate to characteristics ascribed to other senses. For example, distance can only be recognized in sound in case one has a bodily sense of what it means to move through space. Dennis Peters, in his article Enactment in Listening from Performance Research Journal, claims that listening is active. It is an invisible enactment of the heard. If we draw it to the edge, can one say that a performance is itself a score for the audience? Consisting of the performance internal mechanisms of perception. In our case, can listening itself be a score for how the audience actually sees the dance? And the other way around, can the audience actually have a listening experience while watching the dance?
I have a question actually. You just mentioned in the end the word cliché, and I'm quite interested in how you see the relationship between score, improvisation, and these clichés, how you navigate between these three things.
performance, improvisation, and cliché.
Score.
The score versus improvisation versus cliches. I mean, how do they? Is it something which is for you important to? Well, I'll just repeat the question.
If I understand cliché right, it's. It would be like almost the first thing that you think about, which is already in a way, if you have a blank paper, which is already like, if you think of filling a blank paper, it would probably like pop out, maybe a cliche. we are not working explicitly on score, so this was a way to rethink our work in relation to score. Clichés. I think I'm more sensitive to clichés within dance than within sound.
Sure, no, but it could be dance as well.
I think it's clichés are kind of stopping up if they do something, because with them there comes also a kind of no-go. When you know something too well, there is a lot of already known things within that, which is maybe a score would enable new things to happen, ideally, like to go past reproducing all of, you know, cliches thrown out on a blank studio floor or something. So a score would be a constraint to experience something or to find something which you don't know already. What do you think?
It's interesting moving between improvisation and composition constantly, because in improvisation you always think you are completely free, but actually sometimes the opposite is true and you very rapidly fall into the trap of the cliché. And in composition, of course, that happens as well, but then you have the time to rethink about what you're doing, since you have score, which is a crystallization of these thoughts, and it enables you to work on it again and again. And so sometimes for me, my experience is that a score actually gives the freedom to free myself of these cliches, because you have the time to think about it and to think about how to avoid these. Yeah, and I was just wondering if it's a concern you have as well. But you already did answer there, so.
I found it interesting what you said about relation between network and performer and score and society. Could you? Maybe I was missing your development on that.
No, you weren't. There was no. because it would take me quite a long time to get into that, but I'll try to be short. In that piece, for example, I programmed, so the score is a computer program, actually. There are four computers in a network, and the program is written in such a way that whenever somebody, let's say there are 32 cues in this score, and whenever somebody triggers to go to the next cue, every computer reacts on that, and so there is a kind of interaction between the computers, the scores. But since every computer is also an independent system, this interaction is different than when you read a score, a classical, let's say, music score. And the score itself has several levels of instructions, or several different instructions. For example, there is an area in the score where you can get some kind of playing strategies, which relates every performer with the other or with the whole situation, or there is another area in the score where the performers are being asked to use specific objects on their instruments. And there are two areas on the score where I try to force the performers to think as a machine. For example, one area is where visually you see a cursor or a, let's say a buffer being filled during a certain time, and the performer has to try to think as a computer as if the buffer is in his head. So he's doing something on the guitar, the buffer is being filled, let's say in 15 seconds, and when it's filled, there's a cursor scrolling through this buffer, and the performer has to read the buffer, the cursor. I don't know if this is clear what I mean. So it would be very easily performable with a computer. You have information being recorded in a computer, or perhaps it would even, if you have the image of a tape recorder, so you record on a tape recorder, and then you have 15 seconds of tape, and then suddenly when 15 seconds of tape are filled, the tape starts moving, and this should be actually what you're doing as a performer. So you should try to read what is on a certain point on the tape, which is completely impossible as a human performer. But in this case, for example, what I want to try, or what I was interested in, is the tension which you get when you try to make a performer, a human performer, think as a machine. And the final possibility you get on the score is, for example, some kind of long-term memory cues. So the performer is doing something, at certain points there's a color appearing on the screen, and he has to store what he's doing in his head with that color, which would be perfectly easy with a computer, but as a human being it's kind of hard. If you have to remember 5 different states, for example, during a piece of 20 minutes, and then it's being recalled at random moments. So in very shortly, that's what the score does and how this network works.
And what did you mean with society?
Oh yes, sorry. Okay, thank you, Sheila.
Waiting for that answer.
Right, but that's a long part of the answer. Okay. For example, this specific piece is called Infiltrationen, and it's very much on a lot of levels. I was concerned, and I am concerned as an artist, about the interaction between the technological and the human. And in this case, for example, which is of course something we see all around today in the society. So the metaphor was taken into this composition. And yeah, for example, one thing, the reason for the computers bearing the score is that I wanted to recreate on stage the kind of tension you have between your human decision making and technology, which I'll talk about myself only here. I'm sitting behind my computer, let's say 4 to 6 hours a day, so you're completely, we're getting more and more dependent on these kind of devices, and it's something which, strangely enough, on the, let's say, the classical music stage is not reflected a lot. So I think that's very interesting and important. And so for me, that, for example, was a connection between society and the score or the piece or the situation. Is that an answer, Sheila? It's a short one.
So you, if I understand right, you take a phenomenon and you translate it by metaphor to a score.
Yeah, in this case, yeah, you perfectly understood it right. Yeah.
I do have another question for both of you regarding this issue of metaphor, because you both spoke about the white paper and the feedback of the white to the white paper and how it talks back, or returning to the white paper or to the white dance floor. I was wondering, did you mean this literally or metaphorically or both? Because it was striking that you both had the same way of, it starts with a white page. they should do cliché, etc.
Yeah, that would be the cliché. That would be the first thought of the score. For me, when I hear a score, I imagine this first. To be at this, kind of been working on the studio floor and then going to the white paper and kind of trying to translate something from the experience onto the paper. Or it can also start with somebody else had written something on the paper and then the other one. But then my question was then it's a translation. And when I heard this about connection between score and society, I thought there are a lot of scores. And kind of you propose about the skeleton and how to see scores, already existing scores somehow and use them or work with them. Yeah. So not to create it as a metaphor. Just my head now. But your question was about the white paper.
I mean, it's also very literally, because you say, okay, this white paper is the first cliché that pops up, but do you have a white paper in the studio or not?
Yeah, a book.
And when you enter on the first day, you have a blank dance floor, right? So how does it work exactly?
It's a black spot. I just know that is something. I have a paper beside this. The studio project.
Yeah, I think my paper is not always white, sometimes it's gray. Sometimes I already have, or the paper you're working on is an idea or a concept which is on which you imprint concrete things, as you would take a rock and you start. That's not imprinting, that's the opposite actually, but it's the same process. You start taking things away until you really reach the spot you want to reach. So I think in my case, I was talking a little bit more metaphorically, having this feedback with your material, with the white page. But of course, I think everybody has some kind of white page at the moment you start working. Yeah.
Okay, we can hold this issue and might return later to it. So now we have a statement by Ilya Mestre and Markus Simons, choreographers and performers, who presented a project 2 days ago in the festival, in the platform, called I, which was introduced by Lilia right before I being something between gesture and language.
Sorry, between gesture and
language.
Language.
Yeah.
So.
Maybe as for people didn't really see what he did, just a resume of three different scores that we used. One was the idubbing, so we started to make an improvisation on the space through the eye, what kind of gestures, what kind of movements would appear, what kind of relations between us would appear, what kind of sounds would we bring afterwards with this also. And so we recorded, and then we started to look at this recording, and by taking out the sound, to reboot again sound on the top of it. And then we brought the sound to the space, and we do again through the sound the thing, and so on. It could be infinite, but we stopped at the moment that we put it actually language on it, in phrases. The second one was we had three different circles of actions, I had 8 different actions. Lydia had 5 different actions, and Christophe, a musician, he had 6 different sounds that turns over time circular, and this brings new ways of doing, new relations between us, other moments that overlap other moments, and these kind of things. And the third one was with the use of the microphones, which actually, by using the mechanism of the microphones that are turning around themselves, actually by the use of the voice and trying to connect each other first to the eye, doing the same, after how this sound will be transformed towards this circular system of the microphone, going up, down, or using all the mechanism of the microphone. We brought some points to discuss about the scores. One was rigidity, the relation between rigidity and liberty in the scores, the transcendence, the ritual, the process of reading of the public, and performativity and trust. So I will explain a bit this.
Performativity and trust?
And trust. So the first, rigidity and liberty. So we thought about the scores as a way to frame also something, to make also a process of reading it, actually. And the frame is a form of rigidity, and by the fact of redoing all the time, because we use all the time the system of repetition and circular. So how the body could, how we would relate or deal with these impositions, actually. And what kind of possibilities come from this imposition? What kind of behaviors, layers of rhythm, lectures of the repetitive system are we able to make appear? And how, the notion of liberty weighs out spaces in between, become a necessity of the body that is living in this imposition, this mechanism and these constraints. And then transcendence. The fact that we are living or in experiencing a score system, this mechanism, makes you play with the borders and the limits of the score itself. By a form of stretching it, pushing it to its limits, you open up spaces of confrontation, resistance, surprise, expectancy, impossibilities, possibilities, frictions, etc. The artificiality in the sense of mechanical that turns into something organic and alive, something that really is really mechanic afterwards, you, by redoing it all the time, it becomes organic in itself. This relation I found also very interesting. And after a while, the system transcends the system itself, because it becomes alive by itself. And then actually the score, after a while, it's just a platform to emerge something. Also, one of the questions with this, by stretching it, is also to find where is the point of the collapse of the system. Where is the point where the system turns things inside out, or the opposite? Where is the point of danger and safety of the system? And also a bridge between the what is recognizable and irrecognizable. The other point of ritual, by placing the body in a score, a repetitive mechanism can have a ritualistic function. The repetition of a number of sounds, gestures, movements, in our case a circular system of scores, allows us to play with intensities and be affected by this repetition and live it. The repetition brings us to a kind of state where you almost don't think anymore. You just say, you just act, you transcend, you transform, bringing to the surface thoughts, language, behaviors, and layers of understanding and reading that makes us think and get other levels of conscience. The other relation also is with the public. I think with the fact that we put in evidence what is the score very clear, it opens the possibility to public enter in the game. It's a door for the public to get inside the performance. And for this reason, the public is not just contemplating but is active in what is happening. A dialogue is generated, horizontality established in a distance gets shorter. Also because that what is happening is generated by the moment. It brings always different things, provokes always different situations. So we never know actually where we get with it. The other one, the performativity and trust. Because of all the characteristics that it's pointed out before in the use of the score system, it obliges the performer to deal with, for me and for us, with a high level of performativity. The moment when the scores are played are always a moment where you don't know what exactly is going to appear, how you are going to deal with the different situations that come up. The reality of the moment obliges a state of deliverance and trust towards yourself, the situations, and the performance that share the moment. Trust is as a tool to build up relations. The score is a way to define, keep a certain control in a place from where you build up confidence, because even if the limits are touched, stretched, or can be touched or stretched, the scores define the place where you come from and how to play with the limits. Another thing that we found also interesting in the fact of the score is also the relations with the time, the space, and the other, in the sense of actually we made a list of words with we, because we all the time had to reliving, remake, reenact, reinterpretate, rethink, and this I think is what makes the things get to another level. I don't know if you want to.
I thought it's quite interesting the notion of paradox between like something that is very strict and transparent and something that then wants to fly away from it. So the system of freedom, like actually being triggered by a system of constraint. And what happens between these two things? And I also have this image of collapse, and also like one system is actually annihilating the other system by its repetition. So if one enhances a form, the other one enhances kind of expression, but they all, both together when they meet, they kind of drop. Like nothing sustains, everything's like moving all the time. And a kind of ephemeral, I would say, like your, or a mise en abîme, like the thing is on itself, producing something that we don't really know, but though it's very objective and auto-reflective and self-generating. So in a way, I think it's also something that you can look at and not be submerged by, but actually be, and by this is active, no? Or like as audience or as a human or a player.
Yay.
That was very concise. Anybody wants to start a dialogue or has a question?
Thank you very much. It's very rich. I have a question because I'm in an audience for this kind of performances. How it like where the relationship is between your experience and how you develop the scores. And you said the repetition in your case is a door to open, to read the performance. But when it comes to something more complex, like a score performance having to perform like a machine, I wonder, an audience that has to listen through seeing the balance, something, I wonder like how where do you judge whether it's like Like, or what is it that passes on? Is that clear?
Not really.
Not really. to what extent it has to be readable? Mm.
That's
right. A lot of words.
I guess that depends on how you structure and how you... Like in our case, it's very important that's readable. That actually it is really like this, it's almost a fight, you know? Like it's very expressive. And so it's very out there, at the same time it's regulated, you know? And we were interested in how also this transcendence that Marcus was talking about, like how one thing becomes, like you lose it, you know, but it's still there, so but it's not anymore being the primacy of the thing, it's underneath. And it's what and underneath everything there is score, like anyhow, like in anything that exists. So this, yes. So for us it was important to have a transparency of the score.
I guess it's a little bit different in music because it's already something which is a little bit more abstract than a human body. Of course you have performers which have a human body, but it's still a different situation. And personally, for example, the piece I was talking about with the network, we at a certain point we were thinking about showing the images, so the computer screens of every performer to the audience as well. And in the end, we decided not to do that because it would be too transparent, and you would. Of course, this is completely personal and depends on every piece, every composition by itself. But in this case, we didn't want the thing we communicate to be how. A performer translates these playing instructions, but more the kind of context it generates. And to see what you mentioned as well, you have this underlying thing which structures everything, which is clearly very present, but you don't fully understand what it does. And it's there's still some kind of mystery which perhaps gives the audience a little bit more freedom to interpret it. I mean, transparency doesn't necessarily, I think, improve the readability in a way. Or perhaps it does, but it doesn't necessarily improve the way we as an audience engage with the piece. So, yeah.
I'm going to just compliment Stefan's answer, evidence, which is not there's also one very important thing about the piece is that when you press the space bar, the computers of the performers are in network, so it changes the instructions of everyone. So everyone can have actually a kind of semi-control over how the piece or how fast the piece develops when things have to change. Everyone in the group can take this decision. So it's a very decentralized way of communication. And the computer makes this communication very different than other situations with paper scores. And I think in Stefan's piece, what you can feel and see is that this communication between performers runs in a different way than normally with other scores, with other paper scores, because they have this system of pressing the space bar and changing everyone's instructions.
And this system is visible?
I mean, that's what you see, that we press the space bar, yeah. But you don't see the instructions. So I think you understand that there's a different system going on, and it creates a different kind of tension between the performers, but it isn't short because then it would get illustrative more than I think creating it.
I'm interested by your use of the word scene control because you were talking about trust in the moment, but how then to prevent trust to become control again, because in the relationship and in the moment, so.
How was it?
Could you repeat the question again? So
you were talking about trust in the moment, and just trust in the moment to happen. Hmm. You were talking about semi-control, and just letting it happen. How to prevent trust not to become control and to have it in the moment? I think that's...
It's quite liberating to know what you're going to do next. So in these tensile days, your potential arises actually, you know, that also next you might recover, or you might just do something to compensate, or just use it to go higher, or... So actually it's always, in terms of construction, it's quite stable, no? But though you are always there, not knowing, it's again this paradox that I find quite interesting, and that has a lot of potential. Because in one hand you're quite sure, because you structure the thing in a way that you think, okay, this is going to create what you want it to create, and within that you have a lot of freedom. And you can really, so the intensity, but this is in what we did, I mean, in terms of intensity or dynamics, or you can play with a lot of things. I don't like the trust as control. Like, I think it's not the control, but like something that you can relay on more and more in this way. But it was also trust between each other, because we do quite crazy things, and they seem like very crazy and like difficult to actually, you know, like, how are we going to function with this materiality? And then, and this was very important to be able to be supportive and going for anything that could come out.
I was wondering, you talk about machines and stuff like that, and you know that machines, they just count with zeros and ones, and everything is always sure what they are going to do. You've got some functions at random, which I don't find particularly interesting, not in this discussion of constraints and scores and stuff like that. So you put a score into a computer and then it generates something, and knowing computers, they should do always the same thing because they're computers and they can only think in one thing. And I don't know, there's a media artist, it's Jerry Dalla. He's writing his thesis on a thinking machine. It's called the poetic machine. And in that, he tries to make a machine that can think, that can evaluate whether he wants to do this or that. I have no idea how it works. But what interests me there is that the machines become not only the thing that is sure, but they can also generate a change. And I was wondering whether the change in your processes is it. Because if you use a score, it will more or less come out the same way if you think of it as a mechanical thing. But where does the change happen? I think you put it in your title.
Sorry.
Yeah.
I'm afraid I have to come again to the word random in this case. In this piece I was talking about, there is a system which is fully based on the idea of probability. Randomness, in other words. So there was a kind of precomposed structure which consists of lists of probabilities to get some kind of plane instruction. So actually this list of parameters of probabilities is deterministic. It's decided upon, it never changes, every computer has the same list. But since it's probabilities on the list, every re-triggering of one of these lists or parameters can generate a different action. So it does every performance, or even, yeah, every performance is completely different from a microstructural level. On a macrostructural level, there is the same kind of arch or evolution which you can trace back to. But in this case, for example, that was exactly what I was interested in, to have, if you would generate the same score over and over again, of course it would make sense to use a computer, you can put it on paper. But since the medium is a message, we're using technology, so why not using the specific possibilities of this technology? So, and yeah, well, that was my answer.
Yeah, well, I think in actually for us, one very important element was the change. We talked about a lot of things. And I think the fact, I mean, the system, the scores are mechanical, but we are not mechanical. So there is a possibility of making it organic. And a score never defines all the texture of the score itself. And so there are lots of elements inside this that makes the change happening. Like, our reader is the interpretation, our reader is the rhythm, or the relation to space, or the relation to memory. There's so many elements.
But maybe it's important to say that the score,
our score, so the actions they were the score, but the temporality of these actions could change. So of course this creates a myriad of situations, and so you could do one for 1 second and one for 2 minutes next, and so on. So the amount of meetings that these three scores could produce, it's infinite, I think. Yeah, so
that's
all change
order,
was,
but not the rest.
I wonder, when do you start, like you say that your score is very present in your work, do you start by the score or creating the score, or is it being created while you're working?
Actually, when we met the first time in the studio, we didn't talk about score at all. I mean, it was something that was inherent to what we were working. The fact that we were using this expression I, this interjection, which is so repetitive in itself. We were just communicating with us all the time with this I. And also by the fact that we had a problem or placing it somewhere, because it just goes all over the places. We find a necessity to frame it, to be able to see it and to make it, to read this thing and to go somewhere with it. Otherwise, was it possible? But it was the work that demanded the score, was not us to compose the score itself.
I mean, maybe that's because it came from a word, no? And this was the only word you could say. So it's that's just crazy. So that in terms of performativity also, like how you discover or could pinpoint what kind of performativity this word can come about to. So in a way it was more a method.
Mm-hmm.
And then on itself actually became something quite interesting to play with and to also can be shared.
Yes, well there is. I was wondering because for me a score a score is the space or is the structure in which you put concreteness somehow. Or there is a there is a trying of touching concreteness with a score. With a structure that for me could be a score, but it could be also a concept. And a score has also concepts. It's not just a system. At least for me. I wonder how do you project this touching, the concrete? Like if I think in music, for instance, in John Cage, for instance, when he decides to do 1 minute, one song growing, I think that is trying also to make you feel this concreteness, or to make you feel this is happening now. human being is meaning one meaning and growing, that would happen on this different thing. Like, how do you approach this this action in the concrete?
You mean on what you're producing actually? Like what is this provoking? And this
what,
is
yeah,
being,
what
being
you,
the concrete.
What you want, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So this interjection is an interjection that can that means everything and means absolutely nothing without expression or intentionality and some kind of desire to express. Right? So I have to go to it for it to come out. So it's a communication interjection as well, the desire of dialogue and the desire of relation. So in a way, this we wanted to keep these as actually the subjects somehow. The fact that you actually have to go and embody things for things to be and for things to become and to allow any kind of meanings to appear and emerge. Yeah? So each time you need, without any, the score of all activities to become, to just be this pure state of things. No? Like to, is this feeling? So it, in a way, it's there to generate actually what these, it's almost like pre-language, or it's language, but it's gesture, but it's expression, but it's wanting to say something. So, and it's saying something, and the cliché comes in very strongly, actually, and it's very much as the first thing you do, like, ooh, and then so then how you get out of that, out of the predictable. So, like Marcos was saying, like the familiar in order to create the unfamiliar, and or what is unfamiliar in the familiar, you know? And I mean, in a way, it's also a very basic human condition of this one of it's a little bit like nothing and everything.
You're not specific for you, exactly.
Like,
said,
but you
was
in general.
Bring it to the table, like the
yeah.
Things, how you
touch.
Like, so your
pieces,
I don't have any wonder.
I know. I mean,
oh, maybe the other
people. I don't know if I get the question.
I think about this, you wanted to hear.
Well,
I think he wants to say.
I got the question, how do you touch the concrete, very poetic state? It relates also to the issue of segmentation from before, and the white versus gray versus I don't know what color paper. I propose that now we take a short break before we go on to the kind of halfway, say 10 minutes to smoke, have a drink, and then we continue. 24.
So today I'm here to give you a statement about working with scores. Today, I'm here to give you a statement about working with scores. Today is a fixed value. We know it's the 17th of December of 2011. So, today, I'm here to give you a statement about scores, about working with scores. I'm is a variable. And for those who don't know, a variable is indicated by the dollar sign on your keyboard. Because I'm variable one. My name is Am, as Jeroen introduced me already. I'm a writer, storyteller, I'm a member of Constant. And so my statement will be inspired by who I am. If this statement would have been given by variable 2, who is Dorothée sitting over there, the statement would have been inspired by a choreographer's vision. If this statement would have been given by variable 3, who is Matthias standing over there, the statement would be inspired by a musician's vision. And I go on. If this statement would have been inspired by variable 4, which is who is Simon, Simon is living in Glasgow, it would have been inspired by the work of a Floss programmer and artist. Floss is the abbreviation for free, libre, open source software. Does everyone know what that means? No? So you have commercial, copyrighted software, like the operating system of your Mac, for example, or your Windows machine is Microsoft. Mac has patented everything of Apple has patented everything of Mac. But you have a variant, which is an open source software, which is called Linux, or known as Linux. It has different packages, but the idea is that all the software you use is published under a free license. So that is a public a license that allows you to look into the code, to touch the code, to change it, to redistribute it. So the code is actually protected to be in the public domain. So, if this statement would have been given by variable 5, who is Lord, it would have been inspired by a visual performance vision. And last but not least, if this statement would have been given by variable 6, who is Pierre, it would have been inspired by a Floss programmer's vision, but also by a designer's vision. Pierre is also a graphical designer. So we are all part of this research. And if we would have been asked to give a statement and no one of us would be wanting to do it, then we would have put our computer here with a random score of the software that would play and do something. And the software is called Object Scores. It's a motion tracking software. It works with a surveillance camera that films a space, and in this space you can install sensible zones. And when you move into these zones, you trigger sound, image, or something else. So today I'm here to give you a statement about working with scores. Oh no. Today I'm here to give you a statement about working with scores. Here is Le Brigittine. For me, Le Brigittine is a variable, and I'll explain you why. We could say Le Brigittine is this physical space, yeah? Which is then meaning people, tables, lights, windows, walls, some computers. But of course, and I think I've seen a surveillance camera there, but I'm quite sure actually it's one. So that would mean that Le Brigittine is not only a physical space, but also a surveilled space, which means that we're talking about people, tables, walls, windows, but also a surveillance company, a screen, images that are recorded on a hard disk and that are logged and that are kept for a certain amount of time. This is partly fictional, but we're interested in organizing a transnational community of users and developers of the software we're working with. So the ideal would be that we would be able to stream the scores, we execute the embodiments. So that would mean that, imagine that this space would be streamed. We're not talking only about people, tables, walls, windows, a company, a hard disk with images, logs, but we're also talking about a server space and about bits and bytes that, through software, are indexated and can be searched, but can also be crawled, and so all the information can be redigested to profiling, to all kind of means. And we could also say that Brigittin is the restaurant next door, for example. But just in the future. Okay, so today I'm here to give you a statement about working with scores. U, for me, is again a variable. Because I could be speaking to you, everyone, which I'm more or less trying to do now, but I could also use a simple thing of technology, let's say a headphone, and only speak to you, or to you and you. Or even without technology, I could do that. Or I could have the intention to do that. So, today I'm here to give you a statement about working with scores. Working with scores is already our daily situation. Consciously, unconsciously, we do work with algorithms all the time. Jeroen introduced that already in the beginning. We go to the supermarket, you add your item to your points card, an algorithm will be working to deal with those data. The same if you surf on the internet, on Facebook. I'm not going to go into these details, I think that everyone more or less knows that, no? We can also talk about it later. So, here we go. Today I'm here to give you a statement about working with scores. And the statement, for me, is also a variable. So, it's a statement that is inspired by the work we do with Collapse Code, where we use scores in order to create a space for exchange, communication, encounter, and generating new knowledge. We use two different types of scores. One is computer scores. So we're people with all different disciplines. We speak different languages. I think that everyone, maybe later we can talk about this, but we use the same words, but we understand sometimes very different things. And the computer for us is a negotiation platform. It's in that aspect, the mediation of the score is very, very important. So we create scores, we execute them, we pass them on, we change them, we play again, we sometimes throw them away. and then there is what we call, or what I called for today, the social scores, which is the moment that we open up our space for an audience. So that's another kind of score, which can be cards, which is not on here, but rituals or protocols, or an exhibition route, for example, which allows the audience to feel welcome in that space, to explore, to play along, and to share their knowledge, because everyone comes with knowledge, even a child. So, in this case, we use the stage as a laboratory, because the knowledge that is shared with an audience who comes with new knowledge, generates knowledge again, we record this, and we reuse this in other stages. So, as I thought for today that the statement could be provocative, my last page would say, if we use a stage between now and 2022, let's use it as a lab to play. If not, let's not use the stage.
Thank you. You will both stay in mind. Provocation at the end, discuss later on. So I will give now first the word to Leslie Maness and Manon Sandken, who are currently working for as choreographers and performers on a project called Performance Kit.
I'm Leslie. I'm Manon. And actually, your punchline is very good for us to start.
Good.
Yeah, because one of our, maybe the main point that we want to propose with our project is that the moment of performance is a collective enterprise. So we have this triangular relation between us, the authors, the performer, and the audience. And the performance is happening with all those agents. So to explain a bit the dispositif we work with, and so the idea is quite simple, to have to create a pre-recorded score that we give to a performer that doesn't know it, and then he comes on stage and follow the score then as it's pre-recorded. So it's not for us, we make a score for other people, because it's and we don't interact live, it's all pre-recorded. Which demands from us to foresee the space of negotiation that we propose. I would say that we make this, first of all, we didn't think it so much like a work on scores, but in the end, obviously, this is the only thing that we will have, is making a piece that is standing in this, and then you get it and you do something right away. So you're supposed to deal with it instantly, you don't need a preparation, you had your preparation for your life, it's okay, you can use it. Yeah, that's the instantaneity of the dispositive. And yeah, and what we like in this principle, and to come back to the collective enterprise, is like it creates zones of negotiation for each agent of the triangular relationship, which is happening all the time, but the dispositive enhances a bit this question. So because of the instantaneity, there is no agent that will know and get the full picture of what the performance is. And there will be different relation of complicity in between these three agents. Like we have no capacities of knowing what will happen with our score. Like no, we can guide, and although we try to foresee as much as we can, but we cannot. But we do have a connection with the performer as we are helping them or like guiding them or assisting them, challenging them also. Then there is like the performer, he has a complicity, he also doesn't get the full picture because it's instant, he doesn't know what he's producing at the moment that he's producing it. Like, I mean, he doesn't get a full picture, like he cannot plan so much. But he has a complicity with us because we're helping him, but he also has a complicity with the audience that he could totally say no to the score or like fool us. It's like totally a possibility that we imagine. And then the spectators, like they also are in a state of like not knowing what's in the score. So they are also like active in kind of imagining what could be given to the performer to do what he's doing, to understand what generated the result that he's seeing. And there is a complicity also with us, the author, because he sees things that the performers, because of the instantaneity, cannot really see. They have a better view on the full picture.
They have an outside view, which is a good view also, as much as the inside view.
So we see this score that we're trying to prepare as a sort of collaborative, a device for a collaboration that will happen in a not synchronized time. So we really make it for a user or for the users, and we are the users also. We want to make this. We want to propose an experience or a set of situations, and we want to propose it to someone else in order to get feedback on this situation and to evolve. I don't know if the score will change over time so many times, but right now it's really almost an excuse to solicit feedback. And I think this happens in all the stages. So it happens now when we work on figuring out what content for the score, what score, how score, what context for the score, and what conditioning for the score also. So all of this is already part of the score. So somehow how we work, how we speak about the score, how we propose it to the people, how we find the people,